Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. The show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org. And if you go to mobiusstrippress.com, you will also find a lot of content. And I would recommend that if you have questions or if you don't have the content there that's available, then by all means, you should be able to find my email on either of those two websites and be able to contact me, and I will try to get you more content if you're in the game for some content. I will also say that if you're going to have questions or if listening to the content today, as in yesterday and the past couple of days, because I've kind of stacked up a bunch of interviews, I want you to write those questions down because I will have time on Friday to do some calls. What I'm going to do is we'll front load the last segment of Mr. Griffin on Friday, the very front end. And so the rest of the show will be open for phone calls if you have any questions. Or if not, I have plenty of things to expound upon and help hopefully elucidate some of these terms, issues, and matters and concerns. Anyway, I know I always mention the crowdfunding thing, and I just want to keep that kind of percolating because I want you to start thinking about this as at the water cooler conversations and so forth. I mean, is it really worth a little bit of money? I'm going to have incentives. We will have some incentives out there for people that donate a certain, you know, mark of money. They'll be able to get signed books and those types of things as well. So anyway, I also want to let you know that when we do these phone calls on Friday, I would love to invite anybody that wants to come in on the conversation, on the standing question. For that caller, I will be happy to give you a signed set of my books. You only need to just call and discuss with me the philosophical, you know, question, does the Constitution protect religious freedom? Not the Supreme Court. The Constitution. Anyway, as I've been saying, I've got G. Edward Griffin. He's on the queue for today, and he will be on the queue for Friday as well. One of the things I want to get into, and I don't have a lot of time, so I guess I need to kind of fire hose this really quick. I've noticed an increase in ex post facto laws being passed, and I truly believe this is because most people don't understand what ex post facto is. An ex post facto law is a law that they pass that makes something all of a sudden illegal. And actually, if you read the Constitution, that is unconstitutional. And the 14th Amendment protects you from those types of things because the 14th Amendment applied the privileges and immunities within the Constitution to all of us. That's why we have the right of freedom of expression. The individual privileges and immunities are within the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are protected, just like the right to bear arms. States cannot pass laws that do that. But the ex post facto laws are things like outlawing the possession of ivory. Well, so for centuries, ivory was legal to have. And if you happen to own heirlooms or what have you of ivory, all of a sudden, it's now illegal and you can go to jail and they can confiscate your property. Technically, that's a violation of the Constitution. Not even technically, that is a violation of the Constitution because that is an ex facto law. But these Agenda 21ers and these people that are trying to steal your property rights and steal your freedom and privileges as a landowner, such as wells and those types of things, cities and states, counties, and so forth are going after you in aspects of septic systems, wells, and public water, and so forth. And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to pass laws and say, you can't do that anymore. And if you already own that land, and there was no law, let's say you went out and bought land, and they created a law that says you can no longer put a well on that land if it doesn't have a well. Well, hold it. When you bought that land, was it legal for you to have a well on it? Yes. If it was, then you cannot not be able to put a well on it, because that was not a stipulation in buying that land, or that the land value would have been dramatically different in price. And so those people that may be buying land today from those in Washington with the Hearst decision, and this is happening in California as well, my friends, and it will be happening in a state near you, because this is all a part of the plan. The planners have these great plans for you and your property, and you are not really included with them in taking your property. Bottom line, if you bought land and you have water or the ability to put a well on it, and they want to pass a law that says now you can't, and you've had this land for a long time, they cannot do that. Now, they can do that if they pass the law and then you buy the land after the law was passed, then that's going to be stipulated. And then that basically that land is kind of worthless unless you have access to some kind of water coming in and so forth and so on. And so it's really important that we understand the Constitution and our constitutional rights, because most people don't, and the planners get away with it, and they try to start saying, oh, well, this is precedence. There's no precedence that trumps the privileges and immunities within the Constitution or the Constitution itself. And so when we've talked about, you know, oh, well, they've been getting away with it all this time, I'm sorry, my friends, that doesn't cut the mustard here. What cuts the mustard is, is it a right, and is it protected within the Constitution? Is it something that you are entitled to? Is it a privilege and so forth? Anyway, I didn't get a chance to read the bio, so I want to do that before we get into this, and I got about a minute and a half. G. Edward Griffin is an American patriot, author, lecturer, and filmmaker. He served in the United States Army, and in 1956, he was discharged as a non-commissioned officer. He is the author of The Fearful Master, A Second Look at the United Nations, and is renowned for his book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, which provides insight about the motives behind the creation of the Federal Reserve System. His publishing company published The Unseen Hand by A. Ralph Epperson, a comprehensive look at the last centuries plus of dubious behavior of government and globalists. This was my first book that I actually read, and it is an academically challenging book to the status quo. And I highly recommend that, and I actually have copies of that I usually give to people, because that's a ground zero right there. The research that he covers in that is just astronomical. Let me try to get one more plug in here. Let me ask if you remember my shows on republicanism on the 21st and on the 28th of February, to name two shows that I've done. This is why you need to download these, folks, by the way, having these things handy so you can listen to these. If you live in a state that is blue, like Oregon, Washington, California, and so forth, and you're being oppressed by your population centers, you need to get your legislators on the ball by getting them to initiate a new state petition and get this on the ballot. And as a matter of fact, the reason you want to do this is because states, as I've talked about before, are supposed to be Republican informed. They're not supposed to be democracy informed. And when states start parsing up the state based on population instead of based on the county, which is the sub element and seats of government where representation is supposed to be, then you're being denied your constitutional rights of a Republican form of government. I will get back into this when we get back from G. Edward Griffin's interview at the very end of this show. So please stay tuned, and you're going to love these interviews. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Rippey Homes is a family-owned business that has been building homes in the Spokane area for over a decade. For years, they've offered their customers an array of construction projects and services, but due to market demands, they now exclusively focus building high-efficiency homes and business offices, offering custom turnkey solutions for customers seeking to save money on operational costs while enjoying the latest innovations and construction technology. They understand many of these features can be expensive, but this is why they work closely with a team of leading designers to integrate the details and options that suit your needs. When it comes to translating designs into reality, the artisans they employ make this happen. If you're interested in building a cutting-edge dream home or office, then contact Cameron Rippey at cgrippy.com. That's Cameron Rippey at cgrippy.com. This is G.R. Mobley. The reason the progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost all billionaires in the world are funding a vast array of different groups, and their efforts are to undermine our Republican Constitution. If you don't believe me, Google the donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, and many other state rights, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting programs based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty. Thank you. Hey, folks, it's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I have learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Vaughn Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money on just any good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist like Dr. Vaughn Tracy. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Vaughn Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I ask you to give Dr. Vaughn Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. Thank you. Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. If you've listened to my weekly show, Reclaiming the Republic, right here on Red State Talk Radio, every weekday evening from 6 to 7 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. It is a hard, fast contract. In accordance to Article 7, the states are the only stakeholders in this contract, and inherent in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight over the contract. This means they can audit the contract against the general government and the unconstitutional powers they are exercising. Any single state can perform this audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what I refer to as Republic Review. Please read my executive summary on reclaimingtherepublic.org to learn the details about Republic Review. Thank you. Okay, so we're back, and we have Mr. Griffin on the line still, and I appreciate your patience and time, and more importantly, I appreciate, you know, all of the work you've done in the trenches, and I wanted to kind of get into some more of that work that you've actually done with the John Birch Society and Jack Welch and Cleon Skousen. And as a matter of fact, I actually had an interview with a relative of Cleon after he had passed. And apparently he and Jack were pretty good friends, and they actually worked together somewhat in their efforts. But after, I think Jack Welch left, he passed in the 80s, right? Early 80s?
I think it was. By the way, it's Robert Welch.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Jack Welch, my bad. He's the guy that used to fire 10% of his workforce every year with General Motors and made that such a dynasty. My bad. You're absolutely correct. So he passed away, and I think there was a changing in the guard and the paradigm of the John Birch Society. And I believe you've been involved with the John Birch Society for a very, very long time. And are you still involved?
Well, not really. it's hard to say, but I suspect because I came in and into the society in its early days, and I was very, very young when I did. I was still in my 20s. All of that, I'm probably the oldest living member, or having the person who's been a member for the longest period of time alive right now. That's kind of frightening when you think about it by itself. It doesn't mean anything except just an interesting side point. But anyway, I knew Robert Welch well, because he was my boss for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years. We actually, since he was an older gentleman and I was young, it was amazing that we hit it off so well, because we spent a lot of time together, and we spent time discussing things like we're talking about here, you know,
right?
The kind of things that you wouldn't normally get into with your employer. Welch himself was a great scholar, and he was a child genius. I wrote his biography, it turned out. So I got to know a lot about the man. I interviewed his mother. I interviewed his brother, his children, everybody that's worked with him for years, his loyal secretary, Miss White, that was always with him. And I got to know the guy from these people around him, I think maybe better than he knew himself. Maybe that's a presumptuous thing to say, but I know that when I wrote the book, there were parts of it in there that Welch didn't particularly like.
Right. Would you consider him? Would you consider him your mentor?
Yeah. We agreed at the beginning that whether he liked it or not, I was going to write it the way I saw it. And of course, I wasn't trying to do a hatchet job. I admired the man. I particularly admired his grasp of history, unsurpassed. He had a memory like a steel trap and all of that. But anyway, that's all, again, to the side. I knew Welch very well. So when I wrote his biography, I tried to put it into perspective of the evolution of his awareness to what was going on in the world. And it was particularly interesting to do that, because I was going through the same evolution at the same time.
So
Now back to your question. I did get to meet Cleon Skousen. Once, maybe twice, but I never really spent a lot of time with Mr. Skousen.
Okay.
Although I read his works, and I admired his ability to clarify issues and put them into context.
Right.
And so they were crystal clear. Some of these issues are very abstract and arcane, and it takes a special skill to bring them into focus so that dummies like me can figure it out, you know.
Would you consider Mr. Welch your mentor, or would you have considered him more of a, I'll use the word friend and close associate in life, because it seems like you had a relationship that could have been both, being able to talk, you know, putting aside the positions of being your boss and having an unvarnished conversation is more of a friendship type of thing. But was he also a mentor to you and guiding you and helping you, you know, go off and do great things on your own?
I guess that it would be fair to say that, although probably more accurate to say is more like a role model.
Okay.
Because we had entirely different approaches to things. We would agree on basic ideas, but where we would often wind up in disagreement is how to describe it, or what impact it had, or what's its meaning, you know, that kind of thing.
Right, right.
And so we had a lot of differences, including our age, and I hesitate. It sounds so stupid for me to even sound like, as a young guy in my late 20s, that I was any kind of an intellectual match for this scholar who'd spent his life devouring the great works of history and psychology and sociology.
Right.
But anyway, just to give you an insight, Robert Welch had no concept at all of mechanical things. His idea of how an automobile worked was hilarious. And we used to get into some pretty good discussions on how an automobile worked. And so, and that gives you an idea. But when it came to history and his knowledge Oh, I mean, his knowledge of the insect world, for instance, and mathematics. He was a brilliant mathematician. I would never go out into that deep water. And so back to your question, I would say that Robert Welch was more of a role model for me. I wanted to get deeply into topics like he did. I didn't want to be exactly like him because there were some traits he had that I really didn't admire. But he had the other traits were so strong and so powerful. He was exactly the kind of a person you would need to
Right.
launch a movement against a lot of opposition because he was very strong-willed, and that was part of the problem too. You know, sometimes a person's strength is also a challenge. Anyway, I'm
Correct.
digressing again.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Having read some of Cleon Skousen's work, as well as a lot of it, because the thing that attracted me to him was his academic approach and the way he included, source documents and so forth within his writings. One of the things that kind of frustrated me is as he would include statements of Jefferson and or quotations of some of the framers, he didn't really divulge in precisely where those things were. And so they were just like ambiguous writings of and so forth. But anyway, myself, I've always tried to take the academic approach. When I wrote my books, I tried to cite my sources and all of that. And that's what, I kind of used Cleon Skousen's model. And as a matter of fact, another book that I read in the early 90s before your Jekyll Island or the Creatures of Jekyll Island came out was The Unseen Hand by A. Ralph Epperson. And that was an introduction to a conspiratorial view of history. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with that particular work.
I published it.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you actually knew A. Ralph Epperson then.
Oh, yeah. And Ralph was looking around for a publisher, and I read his manuscript, and I said, "Well, I'll publish it." So, but remember, by this time, we've got a little publishing company here publishing my own books, and so I said, "Well, I'll publish your book too, Ralph." So I'm quite familiar with that.
Interesting. And so that opens up a whole new window then, because that particular work is so filled with academic citations. When I talk to people about, conspiratorial views, because as we've talked before, this is one book that basically makes it really hard for anybody that wants to refute a conspiratorial view. You pull this book out and you hand it to him and go look in the back of all the footnotes and citations that he uses. And you tell me that he's just making up some wild conspiracy theory. And so we're actually at a hard break. So if you could hold on, Mr. Griffin, we will actually be right back after a few words from our sponsor. So thank you so much, folks. Please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. My show, Reclaiming the Republic, is more than an educational show. My intent is also to work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is result-oriented and is live across the Republic. Download and share our podcasts. Like, follow, and share our page, Mobius Strip Press, and the articles and content posted on our Facebook page. Get informed about groups in the local area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests as to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. I'm amazed at just how much Rippey Homes takes pride in their partnerships. From the designers they work with, the artisans they employ, and you, the homeowner, they relish in getting it right the first time. to do this, they place their focus up front on what you want and what you need and begin forming a plan like a sculptor, taking care of the intricate details to ensure it meets your expectations. Whether you need innovation in a custom home to harmonize with the environment while offering the latest in building materials and technology, Rippey Homes takes a bottom-up approach that centers around you, the customer. They know that you are the integral component in the American dream, which is how they help you build your dream. To make your dreams become reality, contact Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. That's Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. This is G.R. Mobley. I'm working with Trevor Lawton, Douglas V. Gibbs, Tom DeWeese, John Hancock, and many other good patriots in setting up rodeos for Republic Review this summer. We're doing this in Wyoming, Utah, South Dakota, Idaho, Kansas, and North Dakota for this election cycle. If you are beginning to understand the power of Republic Review, then we need your help one way or another. More importantly, if you live in these states or know any patriotic leadership, whether that's an elected official, grassroots leader, or political leader, please reach out to me on Facebook or email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know who we can work with in organizing these events. It is our intent to get one and hopefully all of these states to call for Republic Review. If we can get this started, I promise you we will make America great once and for all. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive of businesses who are supporting to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. Okay, so we're back, and I still have a very patient Mr. Griffin on the line, and I have to thank you again for this wealth of knowledge and what you're sharing with us, because I think most people don't understand some of these organizations and some of the early pioneers, I will say, in trying to fight and pointing out tyranny and how the game has changed for us, literally, because kids today have no idea. As you said, you were raised as a liberal. When I graduated from high school in the 70s, after I started looking at my position and my thoughts and ideologies, I considered myself a communist, and so it didn't take long to heal myself, but I dread to think of the kids today coming out of school, because they've got to be the useful idiots that Lenin was talking about. But what's more important is what you're doing to help fight these things and your organizations, and I know you have two, so let's first talk about the Freedom Force and the Freedom Foundation. Is it the Freedom Foundation or is it the Freedom Force, right?
Yeah, Freedom Force International. The core organization is Freedom Force International.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for that. That's where I spend most of my time and my thinking, and that's also where I park most of my my plans and my dreams. That's what I'm living to create right now. Freedom Force International is the outgrowth of my lifetime of experience, in which I gradually came to the realization that we can talk about these things all we wish. We can come up with the superior ideas, superior arguments. We're really good in debate, and we've got our documentation. But how do I summarize this? Along the time that I was learning all these things, I was also reading all of the literature of people that I just dislike. Like, I think I'm one of the few people that's probably read most of the works of Vladimir Ilyich Lenin and Adolf Hitler and Mao Zedong and even some of the rare writings of Benito Mussolini and all these characters. And one of the things that I learned early on is the difference between a Marxist and a Marxist-Leninist. And those words mean a lot to Marxists and Marxist-Leninists. And this is not what you asked, but I have to go through this a little bit. A Marxist is simply a person who's read the works of Karl Marx, you know, Das Kapital or Communist Manifesto, and he says, yeah, that's right, I believe that, I'm a Marxist. But the truth is, no country in the world has ever been taken over by Marxists. And that's a shocker. But it's true, because the countries that have fallen to communism have been taken over by this other breed called the Marxist-Leninists. Those are the people who've read the works of Marx, and they say, oh yeah, I believe in that. But they also have read the works of Lenin. And Lenin was an organizer of the Communist Party. Lenin said, now I'm getting to my point. Lenin said, comrades, it makes no difference how smart you are, who you are, how wealthy you are, how good at debate you are, how good your facts are. It makes none of that. It makes no difference at all. What only matters is that you must come to power. Now come to power, comrades, saying anything you must say to do so. Lie if you must. Deceive, cheat, steal, murder, kill, whatever you must do to come to power, then, only then, you can accomplish anything. Right. And this is the point I'm making about this is the kind of mentality that we are up against. These people on the other side, if I may use that phrase, consider that they are at war. And in war, the ethics of war are such that there's only one immoral act, and that's to lose.
Correct.
And what we're up against are people who believe in the ethics of war. And so when you realize that, you must realize that a superior argument or getting a good footnote or being constitutionally correct, and surely any judge or jury would resolve this is not going to work. And so we have to go beyond that and figure out how we can meet this enemy on the battlefield. And what's the battlefield? The battlefield is that I identify our opponent as collectivism, advocates of collectivism, have gone into the power centers of society. And those are the groups and organizations that masses of people belong to, and the leaders of those organizations are a very small number. Less than 1% of the population, far less. But this leadership of these power centers of societies, like political parties,
right,
media centers, church organizations, labor unions, that kind of thing, that tiny little group controls the political destiny of the nation because they control public policy because of their influence over the masses. That's where the battlefield is. So I came to this awareness kind of late in my life. In fact, it was 2002, and I decided we've got to do something about that. So I created Freedom Force International as a movement, I hope would become a movement someday, of people who understood this reality and who were willing to get out of their ivory towers and out of their comfort zone of just, I'm going to vote every 2 years, and who are you going to vote for, Republican or Democrat? Well, that's a tough decision, but I've made my decision, and now I've resolved my responsibilities of citizenship. I voted. You know, this is not where the action is. I wanted people who understood that they had to get deeply involved in this issue if they wanted to restore freedom to their lives and to their country and to the world. And so that was the basis of Freedom Force International. I know we don't have time to go into the issue of how we were going to do that, but that was its purpose. And then the next step in that was, you know, this is a very heady thing I just said.
Right.
And not many people are ready for that. In fact, most people don't even understand what you're talking about. We also know that we have to influence large numbers of people, not just people who are like us, who are willing to spend half their lives, if not all of their lives, dedicated to a cause like this, but people who, you know, normal people, not like us, but normal people that have jobs and families and other interests and hobbies and things. And they're good people. And we need to have them as friends and allies, because Without them, we'll never accomplish anything. So I thought we need some kind of a way to reach to a larger number. And so the idea came up of using the red pill allegory, which most people know is, you know, it's made popular by the science fiction movie called The Matrix, in which the slogan is, take the red pill. If you take the red pill, you see life the way it really is. You come out of the illusions and you see reality. If you take the blue pill, well, you go back into your comfort zone and you believe what you wish, but it's not real, and you are exploited by hidden controllers for the rest of your life. And so we thought, let's try that and see if it might ring a bell with people. So last year we held the Red Pill Expo in, of all places, Bozeman, Montana.
Now, was this your first one, by the way?
First one, yeah.
Okay.
And we thought, well, we'll just see how this works. We expected maybe 200, maybe 300 people to show up.
So if I could ask, when yeah. did you found the Freedom Force International Foundation? And we've got about 1 minute before we have to go into break, but what year was that?
What, Freedom Force?
Correct.
Yeah, it was 2002.
Okay, so that got founded in 2002, and your first active Red Pill Expo. So did Red Pill University just start in 2015 or 14, or?
University wasn't even conceived yet. Our first step was the Expo.
Okay.
And as I said, we had amazing success. 600 people showed up from 12 different countries, and
okay.
everybody wanted more.
Okay.
So we left there with the resolve that we've got to take this 365 days a year, not only 2 days a year. And that's when we thought of the Red Pill University as the logical extension.
Okay.
And that's how that came up.
Okay. So we basically have about 20 seconds left. And so let me kind of frame where I want to go as soon as we get back from the break. I know that you have been working with a lot of different people. And it seems to me that you have an organization of, if I dare say, leaders. And I would even say that you're as such, you are a leader of leaders trying to create this direction. So I need to get back into, when we come back from the break, I need to get back into a little bit more of the model and or the concept of operations of what you envision for Freedom Force International. So please stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back after word from our sponsors, and we will have Mr. Griffin right back with us. So thank you so much.
This is G.R. Mobley. Most of you understand the importance of having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategic goal for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail. And if you don't have a long-term strategy, you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain or restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Tracy at VonTracyDDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health.
Thousands of people each month are moving to what is referred to as the Redoubt area. That's R-E-D-O-U-B-T. If you're tired of insane liberal policies and you have a growing concern in the ideological makeup of your community, you should do what many others are doing and look into joining us here in the Redoubt area. If you settle on moving to the Spokane area, you need to contact Rippey Homes to help you develop the ideal solution that can help you reduce your operational costs and reduce your dependence on the nation's aging infrastructure. Rippey Homes offers a full package service, including real estate, Passive Haus designers, with an array of options to help you blend in with your surroundings. Why risk what is important, your family and your home? So check out Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. That's Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com in the heart of the Redoubt country. This is G.R. Mobley. I've been on the radio for over a year, and for over a decade, I've been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we are going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument, and most do not like it for money reasons. If you have not read my executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can pick up my executive summaries, books, and content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you'll know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content. Most of it's free at reclaimingtherepublic.org and mobistrippress.com as well. This way, you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states, in accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution. These conventions require states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. These conventions are unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to get my executive summary on Republic Review and listen to Reclaiming the Republic right here on Red State Talk Radio every weekday evening from 6 to 5 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific. Thank you. Okay, so we're back with Mr. Griffin, and I do appreciate your time. And when we were going into the break, I wanted to get into the details of the model and or the operational concept for Freedom Force, because you talked about the importance of educating the mass electorate, which and that's the same kind of model that the John Birch Society, purports or supports. Is that not correct?
Well, yes. The Birch Society has always been very strong on the importance of education, and they're absolutely right. And even though we're trying to take this to the next level, because we feel that education is not enough. You know, the old saying that knowledge is power. Well, that's not quite true. Knowledge is not power. Knowledge is the tool for power. It's the opportunity for power. If you take that knowledge and do something with it, see, there's an important thing that's often left out of the equation. You've got to become active. You've got to reach out and gain influence in those power centers I described a moment ago. Right. If you don't do that, if you don't control public, if you not control, that's the wrong word, if you don't influence public opinion, if you can't get out there and get people of like mind into positions of influence within the political parties and the media and all these other power centers, it doesn't make any difference how much education you have. I mean, there are a lot of well-educated people that are lined up in a firing squad, and that's the end of their education, or they rot in prison cells. You've got to take that education, that information, and do something with it. Get up off your couches and get out there into power center activity, right, where the masses are waiting for leadership.
Right.
That's it.
And so I think what you're talking about is pretty key here, folks, because this concept of influencing, not controlling, but influencing people is a key part of leadership. And I think that there's one other dovetailing component to this, and that is motivate. So you influence and motivate people to doing that. And so in Freedom Force International, in this process, what specifically do you plan on how do you plan to motivate people in becoming active?
Well, that's a good question. The word motivation is It's hard for me. Excuse me, I swallowed. I took a little sip of coffee here. Went down the wrong pipe.
I hate that.
Motivation is a tricky thing, because motivation implies, on the surface at least, that it's just emotional. You know, you
right.
want to do something. You're driven to do something.
Right.
Whereas education is a little more stable. Now you have reason. You have objectives and logic and all that sort of thing.
Right.
Yes, I think the motivation comes by itself. We're not what you call motivational speakers. You know, we're not trying to fill you full of sunshine and say, go forth and you can be handsome and you can be rich.
Right.
And all that sort of thing.
Well, so some of the people that you have on your Red Pill Expo coming up, I actually know personally, have met and actually work with, and two of them is Tom DeWeese and Trevor Lawden. Actually, Trevor Lawden has written the foreword to my irrefutable argument of what I believe what we have to do to save the Constitution. And Tom DeWeese actually wrote the backword to that, because they're both really on board with that. But those two are like subject matter experts. And I believe that when you kind of listen to Trevor Lawden and when you listen to Tom DeWeese, and I don't personally know some of the other speakers. Actually, I know Jeanette Finnicum. But I know that they have compelling information that does motivate people, because when people start realizing that the communists are alive and well, in from Trevor Lawden speaking, and or these policies that are taking away our property rights, our liberties, and so forth, that Tom DeWeese speaks about, and you know the fact that Jennifer Finnicum has lost her husband from government tyranny and overreach, those things become, I believe, motivators. But I guess what I'm trying to find is there actually a tangible plan with the Freedom Force International and Red Pill University to say, because there's another organization, and you may have heard of them, Center for Self-Governance, that actually has like an educational plan where they get people to start petitioning and so forth. And is there something like that within the model of Freedom Force? Because I don't know, so I'm just asking.
Yeah, it certainly is, and it's that on steroids, actually. That's what it's all about. I think the best way to answer this question of motivation is to give my little 3-minute seminar on apathy.
Well, so actually, what I'd love to do, because we got about 3 minutes, and I'd love to do that probably in the next segment.
Okay.
But what I would love to do is I'd like to ask if it's feasible to kind of immerse myself with the Freedom Force International, as far as, you know, kind of getting in, talking to you more on the side and trying to, you know, kind of delve into what you're doing. Because I obviously have a plan, and I want to make sure that if there's another plan that is far well ahead of mine that does the exact same thing, then, you know, I'd be happy to retire. I've done it twice already.
Yeah, we're all in that boat, yeah. Oh, Lord, where's the leader that we look for, right?
Right.
So I can go back to playing with my trains.
Right, and so I guess what I could do is, you know, when we're done with these interview segments, I will, you know, reach back to you via your front office and so forth, and try to get more information material, because I'm just absolutely fascinated, because this second expo kind of, you know, is hitting me on the backside, because I live in Spokane area. And so I think it's a great opportunity for people to kind of come and get involved and get educated, get influenced, and get motivated. With that 3-minute, I think, acapella that you have regarding apathy, I don't see apathy. So apathy is a huge problem, but I also see that there's been an awakening. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed
If I may interrupt, I know where you're going. I think, yeah, there is an awakening, and there's also a growth of the opposition. But on this issue of apathy, the opposite of apathy is motivation. And that's correct. What we were really talking about.
Oh, yes.
And I can condense this three minutes down to a lot shorter. Basically, apathy comes when people see no hope. There's, what's the point? I can't. It won't work. And
right.
That's apathy. But if you can show people a realistic plan that you can do something and it can work, now apathy disappears. Now they're motivated.
Right.
And it's a hard lesson to learn, but once you see it, it's so clear.
Oh, absolutely.
So we offer hope, and it's not just pumping sunshine out there. It's real hope because we have a plan that we know will work.
Right. Well, as I was saying, in the 90s, I think people started recognizing the fact that our choice for presidents, we're not going to have any more Reagans come along that will seem to be like a good person to really rally behind the good American spirit that he created. And so with Bill Clinton and the Clinton corruption machine, a lot of people started waking up, especially, and I think the real wake-up call was when the Hillary care actually was thrown across the bow of every ship out there. And people go, are you kidding me? That is socialism. And so people started, and I believe that was the wake-up call. I've got 10 seconds before I go into a break here. But I believe that that was the point where people started waking up. And I think that right now there is a real surge, because I think apathy is shedding for lots of people that are truly conservatives. And I truly believe that now is the time. I think the field is white and ready for harvest, if I could say that. But please stay tuned. And I do want to get more into the Freedom Foundation, or I'm sorry, the Freedom Force International when we get back from a break. So please stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. And so with what little time I have left, I think you're starting to see exactly what G. Edward Griffin has been doing with himself over the past few decades. And so with somebody that has been able to accumulate a lot of information and understand the problem from both top down and the bottom up, inside and then outside, I think you can see that he has formulated a good model, or we're beginning to see that. And I'm looking forward to actually getting into understanding these operations of what he's trying to transform this Red Pill, now Red Pill University, efforts that he has. Let me get back to what I was talking about right before we got into these segments about these republicanism forms in states and so forth. I would like to see every state that has population centers that are literally trying to destroy the Republican form of government that is within those states. I would love to see those people, those good citizens in those states actually stand up and make the effort and make the argument in dividing the state so that they can actually isolate those population centers and let them tax themselves crazy instead of destroying the rest of the good people throughout that state. Let them become the little test tubes to prove that their little socialistic plans is not going to work. And let them try to figure out how to be a Republican form of government on their own. But I think that it's time that we start pleading to Congress that they save us from this tyranny that we are living under within these democracies, because democracy is a swing that literally swings back and forth from anarchy to despotism. And I would rather see them sow or reap what they sow. And so with that, I know I'm out of time. So tomorrow we will be back with another segment, and then your calls and or more information for you coming forth on some more programs that we have and some more information that it's just pouring in, folks. So again, I'll be back tomorrow. And I'm out of here for now. And I am G.R. Mobley, and we are Reclaiming the Republic together. Thank you so much. See you tomorrow.